Today is the hardest I have worked in a long, long time.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Actually, having Wyman on for an hour made my job kind of easy today. Coming to you from our remote Carter Subaru studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Oh, should I say something that's not very politically correct? Nicole, you have a much better success checking me when we're in the studio together. So I'll just ask you now. Should I say something that's not very politically correct?
No.
I'm going to.
But is it necessary?
No, it's necessary. No, it's necessary and it's important. And this is the only radio show where people will hear this. So it's very necessary. What if I tell you how necessary it is? Then can I say?
Well, I trust that you know the line. So whatever comes back from it, you know the line.
Do I know the line? I created the line. Are you kidding me? I don't believe this story about the child corona, the child malady that may be connected to coronavirus.
Oh, I actually haven't talked about this, but I actually am connected through somebody to the kid at Seattle Children's with it.
I believe that there is a malady out there. I think that the amount of play that it's getting is a billion times more than the fear that it's instilling in parents. And I think that there, like I've been saying, there is no easier way to control people than by instilling fear in them. And nobody is more easily filled with fear than parents who love their children. And I think that this is getting disproportionate play because we have to convince people that your children are going to get sick and die. So tell me what you know, because we truly have not talked about this at all before now. What do you know?
So one of my friends, her daughter, is best friends with this kid that's sick at Children's Hospital right now. And what it sounds like is the whole family actually tested positive for the antibodies, and they think that they had it back in, I think, early March. And then, so he was carrying the antibodies and then all of a sudden got sick and his organ started shutting down. And what they say it turns into is this Kawasaki disease. And so once they figure that out, it's fairly treatable. And so there's two children, I believe, that have passed away from it. And I'm not sure of their specific cases, but what I assume is that was early on when they didn't really know what was happening. But now they have said this is what it turns into, is this Kawasaki syndrome, and it's after they've had, like, they've tested positive, carried the virus, they've beat it, and not even knowing they had it, and then they're just carrying the antibodies and end up getting this disease. So it might just make them more susceptible to this disease, but or something that presents like this disease. I don't think they know all the answers, but it's a very, very small percentage, and now they've kind of got it to the place where they know how to treat it.
And I'm not denying that a kid has it. I'm not denying that it exists. I'm just saying that the amount of coverage that it's getting is so out of whack because we have to keep instilling fear. And, I mean, the truth is there have been mystery things. And I'll tell you a very, very personal story. When I was 13 years old, one of my best friends had a little brother, and the little brother got home from school much earlier than his brother and sister. And I got out of school because the high school had a different schedule. So I got out of school on an early schedule. And so this kid's mom hired me to babysit him after school every day. And I did it for months and months and months. And he was the most adorable kid and just the sweet. I was 13. He was probably about 8. And I would go every day and just watch him after school. And a couple of years later, and I'm sure they know, but I never found. Now, it was a few years later because I was driving at the time. So it was probably 3 years later. This kid that I babysat, he was struck down by this horrible, what they believed at the time was a mystery illness, and he passed away. And it was so heartbreaking. It was so sad. And I know that mystery things strike children. I just think that if we are convincing parents that if we don't destroy our economy, your children are going to get this Kawasaki disease, it's all out of whack. Everything about this is out of proportion to me. And I'll give you some examples, because the governor said something earlier today that is as despicable as I have heard in the midst of all of this madness. I'm going to play that for you in just a couple of minutes. But what are the forces at play? Why are we destroying our economy? In Florida, Texas, Georgia, they have reopened their economies much more fully, restaurants, bars, and they're not seeing any statistical uptick in COVID-19 in those states. Florida, you know, really never fully shut down, and they've been, you know, their numbers are a fraction of, I mean, like 1/100th of New York. And the only reason our numbers are so high is because of our nursing homes. I think 31% of the deaths in our state are from nursing homes, about 300 of the deaths. You take those out, and then almost everybody else is over 75 years old. And I know there are some people who say, one life. And those are the same people who are for, would have been for continuing slavery during the Civil War. No, we can't risk American lives to free the slaves. We can't risk American lives to fight the Brits for independence. But now it's, oh, if we risk one life, we should destroy our economy for years and years and years to come. And that's the wussification of America right there. But there are so many forces at play, and I'm going to get to Inslee in a minute. But you may recall this. It was not really said as a joke, even though he is a supposed comedian. But Bill Maher, on his HBO show, he reflected the opinion of an awful lot of his viewers, his audience, and people on the far left, that mass unemployment is fine as long as it hurts the president.
Josh, isn't the Fed cutting rates now just going to make the next economic downturn worse? What's your prediction? I've been hoping for a recession. People hate me for it, but yeah, it would get rid of Trump, so you shouldn't hate me for it.
I mean, recessions are really bad. People lose their jobs and their homes, and we shouldn't wish
it. It's worth it.
I know, it's worth it. That's not said as a joke. That reflected, or still reflects, the opinion of a lot of people on the left. So what if there are, I mean, you just heard the stats, 1.3 million unemployed in Washington? 1.3 million? Three quarters of those? So about 900,000. Newly unemployed because of coronavirus? I mean, and are we saying that a disease that has hit mainly people with underlying conditions, 75 plus, in nursing homes, that we are fine destroying the economy? And again, according to Bill Maher, if people are crying themselves to sleep because they do not know how they're going to feed their family tomorrow night, that's okay, because it might help get rid of Trump. That is one of the very powerful forces. And you heard, he did not say that as a joke. He said that as his reality. And there's a guy who, you know, is part owner of the New York Mets, Bill Maher. He's probably worth nine figures. And but for him, you know, he could lose half of everything and he'll still be filthy, stinking rich. But this is what passes for modern progressivism. zero sympathy and empathy for the poor that they claim to care so much about. President Trump was on with Maria Bartiromo earlier today, and he talked about how Democrats, he thinks, do want to tank the economy until after the election.
You know, people are dying this way, too, when you report this better than I could ever report it. But people are they're dying with this closure, with the shutdown of a country where they're in the house, they're in their apartment. They're not allowed. Some people are too tough on it. They're not allowed to go out. They can't. They're losing their jobs. We're not going to let it happen.
Do you think your critics want you to keep it closed going into the election?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think it's a political thing in addition. I think
because
some
they're
states,
saying you're putting money, business ahead of lives.
Yeah, no. I think the people that want to see the right thing happen, they agree with me. We have to get our country open.
And it costs lives to stay shut down. Suicide, depression. We're getting reports that people calling suicide hotlines is through the roof. Child sex abuse hotline calls are through the roof as children are trapped at home with unemployed parents who perversely take out their anger at the world in unspeakable ways against children. And, you know, the president said he's not just running against the other party. And I do agree with this. He clearly is also running against the media.
I'm running against the Democrats and I'm running against the media. I'm running against the radical left. I'm running against some really stupid Republicans that don't understand how good they had it because we have some I'm at 95 or 96% with the Republican Party, but we have some people that claim to be Republicans and they've gone crazy. And the reason is I've defeated them all. You know, they were all my opponents and they've never gotten over it. Guys, Weaver and Schmidt, all losers. And they go out and they try buying commercials and you say, gee, we've rebuilt our military. We've taken care of our vets. Our vets are in the best shape. You've never seen anything like with the vets, you know, with choice, with everything else. We've done such a good job. And then you add the judges and you add protecting our Second Amendment. And what are these guys going to do? Support Joe Biden? And
no.
You know, because Joe has been brought way left, way, way left.
Yeah. And I do believe the tanking the economy, as Bill Maher articulated last year, has been a long-standing dream. And now we have some more proof of that from Jay Inslee. And I was shaking when I played this for you at the top of the show a couple of hours ago, because this is as disgusting a soundbite as I've heard from a politician. Now, again, my prism through which I view the world is one of empathy for people in poverty. I've lived that. I know what it's like. And I also have friends and loved ones who have lost jobs that were, I mean, they were working their dream job. And the job has vaporized because we've destroyed the economy. I hear every day from dozens of business owners who are devastated because what they have put their life's work, their soul into building is gone. Restaurant owners who know that this reopen plan will ensure their demise. They've been just trying to hold on. And Jay Inslee with his ridiculous reopen plan, and they got to take names of all the customers. Jay Inslee signed those businesses' death certificates. But what we found out earlier today is Jay Inslee is happy about all of this. He went on Bernie Sanders' website so he could talk to the Bernie bros. And Jay Inslee, I mean, all you have to hear is the first few words in this soundbite. Then I'll play the whole thing.
This has always been an economic opportunity.
That's all you have to hear. People are crying themselves to sleep. Business owners, unemployed, lives shattered. Recovery not anywhere on the horizon. And Jay Inslee looks at this as an economic opportunity. And why? because his failed message of climate change that got him 0% of Democrats when he was running for president, he is now hopeful that he can pitch a climate change agenda. And that's not how you rebuild an economy that is shattered. You laser focus on what's right for businesses and getting people back to work. Back to the gov.
This has always been an economic opportunity, but it is such a no-brainer at this moment with the COVID crisis that has precipitated this enormous economic challenge. And we should not miss an opportunity to drive home what Varshney was talking about, that this has enormous backing in our constituents to understand the economic necessity of this. And we should not be intimidated when people say, oh, you can't use this COVID crisis, you know, to peddle a solution to climate change. No, we have to recognize the necessity of this moment, that this will allow us to rebuild our economy. And
could you believe this? He's gleeful. It's an opportunity for his climate change agenda. This truly is as heartless as politics gets. If he doesn't understand, he probably doesn't, because he's surrounded by government workers and he still has not cut a penny. He says he's about to. He still has not cut a penny from the state budget. He is surrounded by government workers who have no fear of losing their job. And Jay Inslee, that's how out of touch he is. That is how completely clueless he is about what's going on with business owners and the unemployed. I have to play the rest of this soundbite. Let me take a quick time out. I'm not going to shortchange this, because this is as important a bit of information, of data, from the data daddy that you will ever hear, because it reveals what's in his heart and his soul. This is an opportunity, according to Jay Inslee. How does that make you feel when you still can't get through to the state unemployment hotline after 100 tries for weeks on end? Much more straight ahead as the Dory Munson Show rolls on. Dory Munson Show rolls on. 1 hour from now, Jay Inslee, live from Olympia. We'll carry it here on Cairo Radio. About time he preempted Tom and Curly instead of our show, for crying out loud. So, Jay Inslee, I want to go deeper into this, because I haven't played you the whole soundbite this hour. Jay Inslee, just despicable this morning. And he cowardly did this on Bernie Sanders, Bernie Bro website. He wasn't saying it at one of his press conferences here. Oh, geez, I wish the reporters would ask him at the press conference today. Do you know, Nicole, is Hannah Scott going to be present on the phone for today's Inslee press conference? Nicole? Nicole.
He's on vacation this week.
This whole week?
I wonder.
You know, Dan Springer, who's the Northwest correspondent for Fox News, apparently he has been on many, many, many of the Inslee press conference reporter calls, and they won't call on him. They will not allow him to ask a question. He told me about that. So,
wow.
Jay Inslee, yeah. But I would love, if one of the reporters, they won't allow me on, but if somebody in the Olympia press corps, ask Jay about talking how this is a great opportunity for his climate change agenda. Because, you know, Jay Inslee, after all, he is the data daddy. I mean, if you don't believe that he's the data daddy, just ask him.
Based on the data that we have now received, this is a data-driven decision. It is a decision that follows the data on the data and our compliance rates. Data, not dates, determine how we act. Depends on how the data comes in, all of our data,
We will have a beginning of a look at that. Dial depends on data on when it can be opened up. And that data changes every single day. That'll be data driven. That's one data point amongst many. And I almost hesitate to show you this one because there are other data points that are not as sanguine. There are many data points, but this is just one. And you'll see the data points. It does not produce as much optimism as the one data point. These are just two of the data points we look at. We're making data-driven decisions.
Yeah, he's our data daddy. Or is it data? I mean, he changes how he pronounces it every other time. But our data daddy, apparently data doesn't matter or doesn't mean that much to Governor Jay. Todd Myers at Washington Policy just tweeted out, you know how Jay at his press conferences, he has these dials for testing capacity and results. Well, this week, the data showed that the testing dials should have been moved backwards because testing capacity was better, testing availability was better, and yet the data daddy didn't move the data dial. Why is that, Jay? When you tell us that you are the data daddy, why don't you change the data dial when the data shows that things have gotten better? None of it makes sense. I mean, this guy, I'm telling you, he couldn't run a... I wish I had a good metaphor for what he can't run.
I mean, they really can't run a two-car funeral when it comes right down to it.
I got to tell you, these people couldn't run a two-car funeral.
And then they're so incompetent. They can run a two-car funeral.
I wonder how the 950,000 newly unemployed feel when a quarter of them still cannot get through to the state unemployment hotline. You can't run that? Why haven't you marshaled all your forces so that the people who don't know how they're going to feed their family this week can get help, data daddy? Why not? Why haven't you said all hands on deck? And now they say they're not going to take outside calls? They're just going to serve the cases that have been underserved. So for the 25% who cannot get through, you're not even going to take their calls now, data daddy? But let's get back to the soundbite. I want to play the whole thing. I didn't have time before I broke there. But data daddy told Bernie Bros that this is a fantastic opportunity, that everybody who has a green agenda should be thrilled. And data daddy told us, you know, just what a great opportunity this is. Again, business owners, unemployed, this is your governor.
This has always been an economic opportunity, but it is such a no-brainer at this moment with the COVID crisis that has precipitated this enormous economic challenge. And we should not miss an opportunity to drive home what Varshi was talking about, that this has enormous backing in our constituents to understand the economic necessity of this. And we should not be intimidated when people say, oh, you can't use this COVID crisis, you know, to peddle a solution to climate change. No, we have to recognize the necessity of this moment, that this will allow us to rebuild our economy and jumpstart it. It was a necessity before the COVID crisis. It is an absolute requirement now to rebuild our...
I know I said I wasn't going to pause it. If he does not laser focus on what's best for the unemployed and the business owners, if he tries to slide in, it's like Charlie Glide on Miami Vice. He's got the slide. If he's going to slide in climate change as how we rebuild our economy, we're doomed. We are absolutely doomed. Back to the
economy. And we shouldn't be intimidated by Republicans about this at all. And the last thing I'll say is we can't use COVID as an excuse for inaction on climate change. These are two things we have to deal with. And we can deal with both because they're so similar. They both are similar that they're based on an understanding of science. They're both similar to understanding that this is under our control. They're both similar that they're both fatal threats to our communities.
Wow. Wow. And this is the guy, of course, who, I mean, this is what he said in his press conference a couple days ago about our state.
We are going to continue to make rational, science-based decisions with both the health of our persons and the health of our economy in mind. And what we know that if we are going to have a healthy economy, we cannot allow this COVID to continue to have massive fatalities in our state.
Massive fatalities. 1/100 of 1% is what he calls massive fatalities. That doesn't sound like you're following the data, daddy. Sounds to me like you're ignoring the data when you say massive fatalities. But data daddy has to greatly exaggerate things. About the only similarity between the climate change and COVID-19 is that your side is exaggerating it by a factor of about a billion, data daddy. Let me take a quick time out because I got a lot of stuff for you. We're going to have a long final segment coming up here on the Dory Monson Show. Breaking news alert from the Seattle Times just now. Got it on my phone. State of Washington to pause unemployment payments after finding $1.6 million in suspected fraudulent claims. So Washington state officials say they are going to pause unemployment payments for the next 2 days because there have been so many fraudulent claims. Why, that would lead somebody to believe that the data daddy cannot manage the most important task of getting money into the hands of people who are crying themselves to sleep every night. Hey, data daddy, come on, run this unemployment thing.
I mean, they really can't run a two-car funeral when it comes right down to it.
I got to tell you, these people couldn't run a two-car funeral.
And then they're so incompetent, they can run a two-car funeral.
Yeah, but we're going to shut down the state unemployment payments for the next 2 days because a bunch of scammers were able to out-strategize the data daddy and his people. Shocking. I did not think that there were criminal minds out there with brain power greater than the data daddy. We're so doomed. We're so screwed. Are you kidding me? All right, with that as mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Okay, the president talked today about a variety of things. I played a clip for you earlier this hour. He thinks that Democrats want to tank the economy up until Election Day to hurt him. Might be something to that. A lot of people on the left have said that for the last year, even before coronavirus. He also said, and this hasn't been reported anywhere, in battleground states, the states that Trump and Biden are competing for, because there are states that are going to go blue, like Washington, California. There are states that are going to go red, like Texas, even though Texas may be getting a little more purple. But right now, Texas is a safe red state. But in the battleground states, Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, the states that Trump pretty much swept over Hillary, brand new CNN poll, Trump has a huge lead in the battleground states. And he was talking about that with Maria Bartiromo earlier today.
Number 3.
Well, I think we're going to have a great election. I'm getting really good poll numbers. For the most part, they're not being shown. And I saw Joe Biden on television yesterday. And if you watch him, he knows nothing. He knows absolutely nothing.
Yeah, Joe is not handling this very well. The the podcast from his basement. And then he also talked about a scandal. I haven't gotten into this at all because it's national and I've been so focused on local stuff. But the unmasking scandal that goes up to the very highest level of the Obama administration, likely involving Joe Biden and Barack Obama, as they revealed things about Michael Flynn, who now has had the case against him tossed out. And this is a huge story that most in the media have ignored.
They weren't after General Flynn. They wanted him to lie about me, make up a story. And with few exceptions, nobody did that. There were many people. I watched K.T. McFarland the other day. I watched where she was knock, knock, FBI, you know, the FBI, okay? This was all Obama. This was all Biden. These people were corrupt. The whole thing was corrupt. And we caught them. We caught them. And what you saw just now, I watched Biden yesterday. He could barely speak. He was on Good Morning America, right? And he said he didn't know anything about it. And now it just gets released right after he said that. It gets released that he was one of the unmaskers, meaning he knew everything about it. So he lied to your friend George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, that is all true. That is 100% factual. At number two in our awesome audio, Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs. He's been a voice of reason through all of this. And he said that the people who say we should just exist, stay in our houses, not see anybody, he said that ain't living.
Number two.
Exploring the unintended consequences of a safety-first culture through the lens of a quarantine was, to me, a really interesting rumination, because we can be a safety-first country, but only for very, very, very short periods of time. And then we're reminded that the chief goal of living is not to merely stay alive.
No. It's to live. And at number one, Blake Snell from Shorewood High School in Shoreline, Washington. He was talking about his pitches for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's his AL Cy Young Award winner a couple of years ago. Supposed to make $7 million this year, but baseball's going to cut their season in half at best. And Blake Snell said, I'm not playing for half the money. And he explained why.
Number one.
Oh, and by the way, I was making fun of Blake Snell, a white kid from Shoreline who talks like this. People said, isn't that kind of racist? No, he's racist for, he's, what do they call it? Racial appropriating. Isn't that what they call it? When you adopt somebody else's culture? Blake Snell explaining why he can't pitch for half.
No, I'm not splitting no revenue. I want all mine. Bro, y'all gotta understand too, cause y'all gonna be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm gonna play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid cause the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. So I'm really getting like 25%. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much I'm actually making to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't making and on
you know, do you know what he's saying, bro? Do you feel him? Is that how they talk when he was at his buddy's house in Shorewood Hills? In Shoreline, Washington. All right, that's it. I'm out of here. Tom and Curly coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. See you tomorrow. High noon. Take care.
Show's over. Come on. Seriously, come on.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.